And we are back. And I am sitting in the studio this evening with the poet, Ann Waters Green, and her entourage, I will call them. Ann, it's lovely to have you here. Thank you for coming.
Thank you so much for having me again. I enjoyed being with you last year, talking about two of my previous books, and I'm delighted to be back.
Oh, we're delighted to have you. For people who don't know you, can you give us kind of a little mini biography of who you are and where you've been? And we won't talk so much about what you've done because your poems bring that out, but maybe just a little background.
Well, I by birth, I'm a South Carolinian, but I have lived in both Georgia and South Carolina over my life, and for that matter, North Carolina and Virginia as well. But Savannah's the place that I've lived the most over my adult life. I raised my children here. The longest part of my career was here in Savannah. The latter 6 years or so were in Washington, D.C. But Savannah is home.
Okay, that's great. And you, early on, you came out with a couple of chapbooks.
I did. The first one, it was called The Season Lengthens, and I sort of call that my early works because that's when I was learning to write poems.
Right.
And then the second one was called Minute Men and Women, and it's a chapbook of poems written in the minute form, which is a 60-syllable poem.
Right.
And those all drew out of the subject matter came out of my family history research.
It featured, well, just about everybody in there was a distant relative of yours from way back. Is that
not
true?
Or a closer relative.
Or closer.
At the end, my grandparents.
That's right, that's right, that's right. I remember now. I remember now.
I had one about myself.
Mm-hmm. And you have now come out with a book of non-minute poems, which I got a chance to look at this week, and I was really quite impressed, both with the thoughts that I saw in there and the breadth of subject. My goodness, you address very many different things in there.
Well, people sort of sometimes say, where do you get ideas for poems, or what is the subject matter? And it comes from everywhere. There's at least one in here that came out of something I read in the newspaper. A lot of it comes out of your own memories or your current observations.
Of course.
There are a couple in this one that come out of the scripture. Both of them are Old Testament book of verses. And so, you know, poetry is all around us if we're watching or listening.
Right. I think the one of the primary prerequisites for doing good poetry is to be a good observer, and you certainly are that.
I try to be, and that's the title of my collection, I should say, is The Watchful Eye.
The Watchful Eye.
And that comes from one of the poems, but it also is sort of where poems come from, too.
Right. Now, in addition to your chapbooks, you've been featured in several poetry periodicals.
Yes, I have over the years submitted to what they call the little journals.
The little journals,
and now
right.
These days, many of them online.
Right, right.
Really, one of the places I guess I'm proudest of having been have my work selected is Salvation South, which is pretty well known around the state of Georgia and has a pretty good following. I'm finding it harder and harder to get into because more and more people begin submitted to it. You know, it's they have very high caliber poetry these days.
They do, and Well, again, having gone through your stuff this week, I don't think you're giving much away.
Well, I don't know. Chuck Reese, you know, is the editor of that, and he's now, you can get him on NPR, on radio, a couple of times a week. And he reads more like essays.
Right.
I think in those cases, mostly things he himself has written.
Okay. Now, The Watchful Eye, when did that come out?
This year, this spring. My publisher is local, Lee Rich,
right.
Montessori Press, and the imprint is called Swan Horse. And I really need to give Lee a plug because the radio audience cannot see the cover, but the cover is beautiful, and Lee did that cover. We're very proud of her beautiful work on the cover.
I agree. And as it happens, I know Lee. I know how hard she worked on it, and it really, really turned out well, I think. One of the poems that impressed me was the very first one. If you enjoy romantic poetry, or maybe something a little beyond romantic poetry, this is something for you. I wonder if you'd read that for us.
I will read it, yes.
The title is?
Ecstasy.
Go.
Ecstasy is like that night I drove 3 hours in blinding rain to keep a date with you. The torrent intensifying with each mile until I reached your house. I stood in your door, soaked to the skin, water dripping from my hair into my eyes. You wrapped me in a towel, warm from the dryer. I'd waited years for such a show of love. Romance is too weak a word. That's a favorite, and it's... Several other people have commented on that.
Oh, I think it's a favorite. It's very relatable. I think anybody can picture themselves in that scene, and it's so perfectly told.
Thank you.
We have your romantic poetry. There's quite a bit of poetry devoted to nature in this volume. There's some, as you said, devoted to scripture, or at least using scripture. There's some devoted to different places that you've been that kind of made me wonder if it was those places were within my driving range, and several other things. It's probably unfair to ask you if you have a favorite, but do you have one in particular that stands out to you?
Well, I have one that doesn't fit any of the categories that you're talking about, but means a lot to me, and it's one that grew out of personal experience with, I give a little bit of background. My sister, who is 3 years younger than I, had a major stroke at the age of 54. That was almost 30 years ago now for her, and she's one of my heroes. She plugs along, and so this poem called Aphasia is about her and our relationship. Aphasia, we sit at her kitchen table, my sister and I, 20 years since her stroke. Her husband cooks, using both arms, both hands. Later, she'll wash dishes. Her left arm, left hand, doing the work of two. We talk the way we've learned. She has something to tell me, begins, hesitates, searches for a phrase. I wait, nod, supply a word now and then, guess a little. She spits out part of her story. We both exhale. She catches my eye, laughs, taps her forehead. There's so much going on in here. I imagine that there are people listening who have either suffered from aphasia themselves or have been closely associated with someone who has. And so this one's just one that means a lot to me.
Oh, it was one that impressed me, too. I'm not going to ask you where you get your ideas from, because you've already told us. But you have a certain way with words, a certain way of dressing up the idea so that it's relatable to everybody. Everybody understands it. And you give it kind of a shine by the way you use your words. Is this something you do consciously, or is this something that just comes to you, or is this a matter of long experience, or how does that come about?
I am not a natural. It doesn't just come to me. I've heard people say, that poem was just a gift. It just popped into my head full-blown. Mine don't come that way. I work at it. And I've taken many, many classes since about 2007. So coming up on 20 years of working with better poets than I as teachers. So it's a learned skill for me. I think that's the best way to answer that question. I work at it. I don't write every day like many, many people do or claim to do. But I've had the great good fortune of good instructors. I think I probably mentioned when I spoke here on the radio last year that I took courses at the Great Smokies Writing Program while I lived in North Carolina. And that's a part of the University of North Carolina, Asheville, although not on the campus. But fine, fine poets teach. And I took, almost every semester, I took a Great Smokies Writing Program course and was taught by some very fine poets.
Yeah. Now, a little bird told me that there was quite a skilled poet who was going to be teaching classes in poetry at the Learning Center. Do you know anything about that?
I can tell you a little bit about that. I don't know how skilled she is, but she's enthusiastic. I'm sure many of your listeners are familiar with the Learning Center at the Senior Citizens in Savannah and with Roger Smith, who's the director. And since I came back to Savannah 4 years ago, I've been taking classes there, participating in a lot of ways. And I keep telling Roger, we need more poetry there. We need more poetry. And so most of what's done there is more lecture style. And what
True.
We're going to do will be a workshop. It'll be limited to 8 people. I will be delighted if 4 people sign up, because a lot of people would rather not do something that's as interactive as that is. But we'll be writing poems, and I will be giving prompts, and we'll be reading. We'll really be reading good example poems by poets, you know.
Well, as you said, that's a terrific stimulus.
Well, I hope someone's listening right now and can't wait to run and sign up. They can do it online.
Ah, that's even better.
Yes.
Okay, well, I want to go a little bit more into your current volume, The Watchful Eye. But we have interesting and informative things to tell people, and we will do that first. With Ann Waters Green, who has been talking about her new volume of poetry and how she got there, and perhaps even maybe a little bit about where she's going with it all eventually. A poem that struck me particularly is one called I Did Not Learn the Stars. Can you give us that one?
Yes, and that's the one from which the title of the volume came. And this was, I did not learn the stars, and I have it that it is for Jim, my husband. I never found Orion's belt, nor dippers large and small. But on this mountain, the sky is bigger, blacker. The stars seem brighter and more numerous than anywhere I've been. And I am more aware. On this clear night, I follow you into the dark. A firefly flashes among the trees, its lamp-lit tail frantic beneath the solemn lights above. I think of summers long ago, a restless girl chasing lightning bugs. These same stars shone nameless overhead. You know the stars, point out Polaris, show how Big Dipper guides the watchful eye true north.
Very nice, very nice. Another thing that I noticed about your poems is in some cases you've taken stuff that other people did and not copied it, but you've taken the thought and given it your own personal spin.
And speaking of after poems.
Yeah, yeah. Or the one that kind of caught my attention, there were more than one actually, the one that I like terribly well enough to bring it up now is Ode to the Shaker Hymn, because I love the Shaker Hymn.
Yeah, and that one's not so much an after poem as it is an ekphrastic poem. That is, I took music and wrote a poem about it. So ekphrastic means art based on art.
Got it. We'll go into a more proper definition, perhaps one more after this. But can you give us that one, please?
Ode to the Shaker Hymn. Sing it anyhow, I said when my daughter quibbled. It just wasn't seemly for a wedding. I, the bride, if an old one, and my groom, no younger, relished the valley of love and delight, had grasped gifts of being simple and free, found them worth singing about. No matter, she could belt out Ave Maria without rehearsal time. We knew the Shakers told it too true, at least about the place just right. We didn't buy the celibacy, but oh, the tune, the melody, the music's trek, England to Maine, Copeland to Ma, Graham's ballet, Crane's poem, Krause's vocals, all those variations mirrored our own long, separate journeys to simplicity, where by turning, we'd come round right. Sing it.
Yes. For people who don't know that, the references to the Shaker Hymn, 'Tis a Gift to Be Simple, which has been used, in many different ways, played in many different ways. Probably the most famous is Aaron Copland used it for the Appalachian Spring Suite. And it's a big favorite of mine, and that's why I gravitated toward that. I was a little surprised to see a take on New York City in there from you. It was based on something that Joseph Stella did.
Yes, let me turn to that. If you've got it bookmarked, tell me the page. Here it is. I've got it, page 44.
Okay.
This one, I have to give another shout-out to the Learning Center. I took a class on modern art by one of the instructors there, and it was, pretty late modern art, 20th century.
Right, right.
So he showed this picture called The City, this huge painting. Let me say it's in the Newark, New Jersey Art Museum. I've never seen the painting in person, but it is huge on panels. And he painted it, between the periods of 1920 and 1922. And I was just so taken by that huge painting in panels, like an altarpiece. I've visited New York because I have a daughter and son-in-law and grandchildren who live there. I've visited New York a number of times.
Oh, okay.
And I just thought it's a different period of time than when I've seen it. I was not living in 1922, but I just loved it. And so that I went home and started trying to write a poem. And this particular one is a form called a hyben. And I'm sorry that our listeners can't see it on the page, but what it amounts to is you've got a stanza of about four or five lines of prose, followed by a haiku, and then prose, and
okay.
Then a haiku.
I did not notice that. Thank you.
And that's that. Only recently in my learning have I even learned about hybens, but that's what the form
okay.
is.
Okay.
So I shall read it?
Yeah. If you would.
Urban altarpiece. After the Voice of the City of New York, interpreted by Joseph Stella, 1920-1922. Harbors teem in daylight. Tugs guide ships to berths. Longshoremen heave and grunt as they load and unload cargo. Foghorn whistles resound for miles. Stella ignores the bustle. A night sky looms over tanks, piers, oceans. Weary stevedores fall asleep on subways home. Wharf rats claim the port. Taxicabs swerve and honk down Broadway. Tourists stumble or skip along crowded sidewalks. Trains rumble underground. Theater marquees shout silently. Neon bounces off rain-slick streets. Backstage angels pray. Nervous directors fidget. Actors peruse scripts. Modern buildings tower over brownstones. Industry breathes energy into city air. New York floats above Manhattan Island like a giant ocean-going vessel, cutting through waves, conquering land and sea. Does the center panel pay homage or hurl blasphemy to the cross of Christ? As speculators applaud Wall Street's rampant greed, girls toil in sweatshops. New York vibrates, celebrates, dominates. Midtown North, Midtown South, the Big Apple pulses with sound. Streetcars clang, vendors hawk hot dogs, newsboys holler, extra! Bands boom, Sousa marches, pipe organs blast and whisper fugues and sonatas. News hot off the press, 19th Amendment passes, women gain the vote. The bridge sweeps over the East River, Cambridge span soars high above barges, scows, and merchant ships, borough to borough. Manhattanites promenade on Coney Island, Brooklynites picnic in Central Park. No need for ferries. The Roebling's brainchild, towers, girders, steel cables strung across the sky.
As they do to this day. Have you ever walked across the Brooklyn Bridge?
I have not. Time may be running out on us for the ability to walk across, but my kids have done it a number of times, and we always say, we're going to do that next trip, but we haven't.
It's quite an experience.
Yeah.
It actually, you have to be kind of careful about the weather because it can be kind of a miserable experience if you pick the wrong weather.
Yeah.
But it can be terribly just an experience. I don't know really. I know where you've been. You've mentioned South Carolina. You've mentioned Western North Carolina, D.C. area, and here. And yet, with the exception of that particular poem, and poems that you've where you actually name the place, and you do that a couple of times. When I read your poetry, I in my mind I paint landscapes that might be common to almost all of those places, especially the Carolinas and down here. Is this something that you notice? Is this something that you resonate with, or is this something that you pick up from these places individually?
Well, there's several poems in here that are to me very much Western North Carolina. They're hiking place poems in here that all took place in Western North Carolina. There's one about walking around Lake Mayer here in Savannah.
I did see that. I did see that.
the across the Laurel River Trail is Western North Carolina. I'm looking for this one called Gorges State Park, Transylvania County, North Carolina. And there's one that's Upper Greenville County, which is real near the Greenville, South Carolina, right at the the borderline between the two states, Sulphur Springs Loop, Paris Mountain State Park. And on the facing page to Sulphur Springs Loop, there's one Screen Porch Afternoon, which is very much South Carolina low country. That's where it happened. And I've got one that's all over Georgia, or at least the parts of Georgia.
That's
where I lived in much of my childhood. That one was published in Salvation South, Chuck Reese's online periodical, Georgia on My Mind.
So there's that whole flavor to your poetry, too. And again, there's a lot of commonalities, but in where you name specific places like the Gorges State Park, I can kind of in my mind the terrain becomes a bit more mountainous than in the things here, and then I have seen you referred to as a feminist poet. And there are so many different flavors of feminist poet nowadays, I'm not even sure what that means anymore. Can you tell me what that means to you?
Well, our mutual friend Lee Rich is the one. Of course, Lee is a generation younger than I am.
Yes.
So she's a different sort of feminist. But, you know, I went to law school in 1963 when there were not many women going to law school. So while I don't, you know, I never marched during those periods. I had little children. But I certainly was an equal rights type of feminist.
Absolutely.
And equal opportunity. I've told some funny stories that I won't take our time up on. When I was in law school, the class I was in had 5 women the first year and 2 the subsequent 2 years. So there were only 2 of us who graduated in my law school class, where nowadays it's 50% or more of law school graduates each year are women.
I believe that. I believe that... at least in things like employment, vocations. I think we've come some way from the way things were back then. And
we have. I don't think we've come all the way, but
you and I are roughly contemporary. Yes. So I understand what you're talking about. Well, okay. Let us assume for a moment that people have had their interest piqued by what we've done with the Watchful Eye. Where can an interested person buy it if they wish to?
You can buy it on Amazon.
Okay.
You can buy it at Barnes & Noble's online.
Okay. And Monte Ciccieri
has a place you can pick it up, too. You need to contact Lee or me and get a copy to you locally, yes.
Right. And as you mentioned, you spend a fair amount of time over at the Learning Center, so if anybody wants to talk to you personally, that would be a good place to start.
That would be, and again, we can plug starting September the 23rd from 2:30 to 4 on Tuesdays afternoons. Someone can either just run into me there or sign up and write some poems with us.
I think if your top capacity is 8, I think you'll get there. I really do.
Well, that's, you know, you don't want a much bigger class than
when you're
going to workshop each other's poems. And
absolutely.
I intend to be a participant as well as the facilitator.
Right.
I'm looking for the kind of poetry community that I experienced during my years in Western North Carolina. So I'll be doing my best to write everything that the other members of the class write.
Okay, great. Well, that covers the near future. Do you have anything planned for after that?
Well, I've begun a few weeks ago. My husband and I, while on a family vacation over near Pawleys Island, South Carolina, we visited Brook Green Gardens, which is actually located at Murrells Inlet. Their advertisements say between Myrtle Beach and Georgetown, but it's just slightly north of Pawleys Island, which is an absolutely marvelous, among other things, it's an absolutely marvelous sculpture garden with over 2,000 pieces of sculpture, large and small. So I was inspired to come home and write some poems about some of the sculptures I saw. And I've returned to the minute form. I'm writing these short 60-syllable poems. We'll see whether it stays that way, but that's what I'm working on now. I've written about 11 of them. Since I'm writing in the minutes, and they're 60 minutes, I'd love to write 60 poems. That's my hope. So we'll see whether that actually happens or not.
And if it doesn't, I don't think it's an occasion for mourning, because I think in this volume you've shown a talent for longer forms as well.
Well, thank you. I'm thinking that in this workshop that we anticipate that we'll be looking at a number of different forms, sonnets and villanelles and free verse, which is what most of us write. Modern poetry is mostly that, but we will look at the given forms as well.
Now, in many cases, your poetry probably could be described as free verse.
Yes,
but in some of your poems, I don't know whether it's that there's more poetic structure or there's more thought structure or how to put it exactly. Is this something you pay attention to?
Well, you know, the thing that really makes a poem is that uneven right margin.
Right.
So every time you're writing, you decide where to end a line, either with an end stop or you end jam and go back to the next line. So I'm laughing because we went to North Carolina when we had a reading from this book back in May, and the day next day had lunch with some of my friends, one of whom is a PhD professor, very well published. And I said, well, all poems have form, don't they? And he said, well, the poet thinks they do. So, even free verse, you're trying to emphasize that which is worth looking at, and you're trying to, you want a strong start, you want a strong ending, and you don't want to leave something hanging out here, unless you want to leave it hanging out here to get the interest to come back.
Uh-huh.
So yes, even free verse has form too. It's just not named forms like villanelles and haikus,
right,
and sonnets.
Right. And sometimes the form it takes depends on the subject matter too, and that's important. I noticed in one of your poems to do with hummingbirds that graphically, as you read it on the page, there seems to be a form there. It's page 26, I believe. You're doing something.
That's a form. That's either called a shape poem or a concrete poem.
Oh, okay. So there's actually a name for
that.
There
is a name for that. One of my friends whose sister was a professional clown. We were in a class and we were to write a poem about an object, and she wrote a poem about her sister by then was deceased, and she was writing things in tribute to her sister. But she shaped it like the clown shoe.
Okay.
And that actually ended up to be the genesis of a whole collection about her sister's life as a clown.
That's great. Well, okay. I was very favorably impressed with what I saw in this volume, and congratulations on getting it out. I predict that people will be interested in it, and I wish you the best of luck with your class coming up. Perhaps at some point you can come back and tell us all how that went.
That would be good. Maybe
talk about some of your adventures there.
Find another budding poet that you'll want to interview.
That might be. We can talk about that. We can talk about sculptures around Pauli's Island and all that other stuff. At any rate, thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you.
Do you have any last thoughts for the listeners?
I hope that everyone, some people think they don't like poetry, but I think they just haven't read it. I would say find a, Garrison Keillor has several volumes, good poems or good poems.
Yes, yes.
Just get something that's a good introduction, not necessarily what you learned in school, and just read poems. I think that will enlarge everyone's life, and read them aloud. And read them more than once.
And with the appropriate amount of reading, I would guess that you think that people might be able to start forming poems on their own.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, again, thank you for coming. And thank you, Anne's entourage, for accompanying her here. Great to see both of you again.